You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, Candy One, Candy One. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Sheet Metal Workers Local 2 and Teamsters Joint Council 56. Sheet Metal Workers Local 2 represents 1,200 members in western Missouri and eastern Kansas. We start with the sheet metal and make nearly anything out of it for industry, heating and air conditioning, architectural roofs and siding, kitchens, and even works of art. And Teamsters Joint Council 56 and our 9 local unions representing 30,000 workers, retirees, and their families in western Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. We are proud to support the Heartland Labor Forum and their commitment to give working families a voice in the greater Kansas City community. And we thank our underwriters for their contributions and support of the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. On tonight's show, our schools are under attack. Recently, the Kansas City Call asked whether the KCMO school district, with its low test scores, should even have partial accreditation. On tonight's show, KCMO public school teachers and an administrator push back. They say enough's enough. In the news, the elections were a disaster for labor, especially in Missouri. Here our wrap-up with a little hope at the end. Our feature at the end of the show is Remember Our Struggle with Ariana Eckel. Now for the news.
The news from our side, November 11, 2016. Let's assess the results of the election from the point of view of organized labor. Mark Gruenberg of PAI, a labor news service, said the political roof fell in on national unions and their leaders on November 8 as unionists as well as other voters voted Republican, presidential nominee Donald Trump. CNN reported that in two late key swing states, Wisconsin and Michigan, unionists and their families split 50-50 between the two. Sean McGarvey, head of AFL-CIO's Building and Trades Departments, explains it's been 30 years of getting screwed by both parties, Democrat and Republican. Richard Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, said, more than anything, this election was an indictment of politics as usual. For too long, the political elites have embraced economic policies that hold wages down, increase inequality, diminish opportunity, and ship American jobs overseas. Voters in both primary and general elections have delivered a clear message. Enough. President-elect made promises in his campaign on trade, restoring manufacturing, on rivaling and reviving our communities. We will work to make as many of those promises a reality. If he's willing to work with us, consistent with our values, we are ready to work with him. But make no mistake, we can never back down from our values. The presence of racism, misogyny, anti-immigrant appeals caused damage to this campaign, and we must all try to repair it with inclusion, decency, and honesty. As we move forward, the labor movement is committed to defending our American democracy.
And in Missouri, the story was about as bad as it could get. Every statewide race, including governor, senator, attorney general, and secretary of state, was won by Republicans by a wide margin. Missouri's unions had worked hard to elect Democrats to those posts. The legislature remains firmly in the Republican control, and with a Republican governor replacing Democrat Jay Nixon, There won't be any vetoes for anti-labor legislation. This puts Missouri at the top of the list for passage of anti-union right-to-work law, making membership voluntary, even though those unions will continue to have to represent, have a legal responsibility to represent workers who don't pay their dues. And it's near certainty that other any labor legislation will follow. Curbing the political voice of unions, attacking public employees, prevailing wage laws, and gutting workers' compensation. The Kansas City Building and Construction Trades has endorsed and worked for a number of state Senate and House candidates. Results were mixed. In the state Senate, they endorsed in four contest races and won three of them. One was a Republican, Ryan Silvey, who has voted with labor on right to work. In the House, they endorsed 12 in contested races, and only six of them won, including two Republicans. Labor's strategy of courting Republicans to help with veto overrides is now defunct, and a major rethink will be necessary as continued working with Republicans seems unlikely.
There were a few bright spots for labor in Tuesday's results. Hillary did win the popular vote thanks to California, where she piled up huge leads, but that counts for little. In Virginia, a constitutional amendment to make its right-to-work law permanent was defeated 53-47%. This doesn't change anything, but at least gives Virginia workers the hope that one day they can repeal it without having to change the state constitution. Minimum wage passed everywhere it was proposed on the state ballots. Arizona, Maine, and Colorado voters approved $12 minimum wages by 2020. And in Washington State, voters approved the raising the state's minimum wage in steps from $9.47 to $13.50 by 2020 and mandating employers to offer paid sick leave. There, the vote was 59-41% in favor. Arizona's law also included paid sick leave and passed 59-41%. The minimum wage increases in Colorado and Maine both passed by 54% and 55% margins. The popularity of minimum wage hikes at the state level, mixed with the failure of Congress to pass a nationwide minimum wage hike, and Donald Trump's opposition to raising the wage, makes it more likely that more states will raise the wage in the future. Both the state of Maine and the city of Flagstaff, Arizona, joined a growing number of jurisdictions that have voted to eliminate the lower wage for tipped workers. Currently, the federal minimum for tipped workers is a lowly $2.13 an hour. In Missouri, it's half of the state's minimum, or $3.83. Meanwhile, South Dakota trashed a business-backed GOP scheme to institute a youth sub-minimum wage.
So what the heck happened to labor and Democrats? One of the most helpful and forward-thinking analyses came yesterday from longtime labor activist and former AFL-CIO education director. Here's a few snippets of his commentary. The Trump victory was far from a slam dunk. The election was very close. One might not get that impression, however, when one looks at news headlines as well as electoral college maps. The election was a referendum on globalization and demographics. It was not a referendum on neoliberalism. It is critical to appreciate that Trump's appeal to whites was around their fear of the multiple implications of globalism. This included trade agreements and migration. Trump focused on the symptoms inherent in neoliberal globalization, such as job loss, but this was not a critique of neoliberalism. He continues to advance deregulation, tax cuts, anti-unionism, etc. He was making no systemic critique at all, but the examples that he pointed to from wreckage resulting from economic and social dislocation resonated for many whites who felt, for various reasons, that their world was collapsing. It was the connection between globalization and migration that struck a chord, just as it did in Britain with the Brexit vote. Protectionism plus firm borders were presented as answers in a world that has altered dramatically with the reconfiguration of global capitalism. Fletcher next says, the election represented the consolidation of a misogynistic white united front. Too few commentators are addressing the fact that the alliance that Trump built was one that not only permitted but encouraged racism and misogyny. Trump was given a pass for his own behavior that would only be given to a white man in U.S. society. Just as with the Tea Party, the mean income of the Trump base is higher than the national mean and was higher than the mean for Clinton supporters and Sanders supporters. Thus, we were not dealing with the poorest of the poor. Instead, this was a movement driven by those who are actually doing fairly well but are despairing because the American dream that they embraced no longer seems to work for white people. This segment of the white population was looking in terror at the erosion of the American dream, but they were looking at it through the prism of race. In entering the Trump era, it is the movement that Sanders was part of coalescing that becomes key in building a resistance that has a positive vision. One of the weaknesses of the Sanders message was its failure to unify matters of class with race and gender. This is not an academic exercise. This is about telling the right story about what has been happening in the USA. It is also a matter of tapping into significant social movements, for example, Occupy, immigrant rights, LGBT, environmental justice, and the movement for Black Lives. These are movements that are focused on the future and a future that is progressive. This is, in fact, where the hope lies. You can find the entire article at billfletcherjr.com/blog. The news tonight was read by Michael Savoir, Molly Madden, Jen Zaman, and myself, Ariana Eckel.
I was sitting on an airplane and the nice talkative man in the middle seat, if I think someone is talkative, oh my God, they're so talkative. And he's telling me where he's going and what he's doing and what his business is. And he says, so what do you do, darling? And I said, well, I'm a teacher, and now I work with the National Education Association. And he stopped smiling. And he said, I've heard about you people. He said, I hear you need this, and then I hear you need that, and then I hear you need something else. And to tell you the truth, darling, I'm getting tired of hearing it. I'm a businessman. I want you to bottom line it for me. I want you to tell me right now, what is the one single thing that would solve all of our problems in public schools? And I said, that's easy. What we really need are fewer people who think there's one single thing that would solve all of our problems in public schools. And you know, I wish I hadn't been so snotty to that guy, but it was fun. And here's the thing, he's not the enemy. Most people, their kids are grown and gone, or they never had kids, they don't walk into a neighborhood public school. I'm an educator. It's up to me to educate the man in the middle seat as much as to educate a politician about what happens in any given typical school on any given typical day. I mean, we serve kids a hot meal. We put Band-Aids on boo-boos. We diversify our curriculum instruction to meet the personal and individual needs of all of our students, the blind, the hearing impaired, the physically challenged, the gifted and talented, the chronically tardy, and the medically annoying. We make sure that they've had their immunizations, make sure they understand disease control, teach them to resist drugs, alcohol, tobacco. We give career counseling, pregnancy counseling, mental health counseling. We get them on the bus safely. We take them off the bus safely. We provide computer instruction, sex education. We stop bullying, teach them to say, I'm sorry, and mean it. We instill an understanding of civil rights, the political process, challenge racism, foster social tolerance, tolerance and appreciation for our cultural and religious diversity. We teach the principles of free enterprise, how to be a good sport. We develop personal responsibility, practice bicycle safety, and check for head lice. We provide bilingual education, teach metrics, how to be a wise consumer, exercise weight control, how to drive a car. We teach the impact of wars, develop collaborative skills, how to tune a violin, how to use reason and evidence to protect the future. We teach them to revere their environment, how to manage their money, how to access information, how to make wise choices, how to balance a checkbook. We teach loyalty to the ideals of a democracy. We build patriotism, good oral hygiene, and respect for the worth and dignity of every individual. We nurture curiosity, encourage a good question, build self-esteem, and then we teach reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. The introduction you've just heard was done by Lily Garcia, president of the National Education Association. It depicts the range of responsibilities and duties of an average teacher in the United States. My name is Veronica McDaniel.
And I'm Chris Mann.
And we are your co-hosts for this evening's program. Our topic is defending public education right here in our own city, Kansas City, Missouri. Our educators are
Joyce McCauley,
Monica Thomas,
Shirley Chibagu.
Our voices do matter. As educators in the Kansas City Public School District, our voices matter. We're speaking not only for ourselves, but for our students, our community, and the city of Kansas City. 9 times out of 10, it appears that media broadcasts seem to cast the Kansas City Public Schools in a negative light.
When you demean the Kansas City Public School District, you are demeaning the entire Kansas City area. When children in the community hear their schools are bad, it gives them a sense of despair and serves to internalize inferiority.
We acknowledge that data is valuable, but there is more to Kansas City Public Schools than test scores. Tonight we have a panel of Kansas City Public School educators in the studio. They will describe what their challenges and rewards are about working in the Kansas City Public Schools and why they keep working there.
We are also pleased to have Natalie Allen here. Natalie is a member of the communications team for the Kansas City Public School District. We'll dialogue with her about the great things that are taking place in Kansas City Public Schools. Natalie came from Baltimore to join the communications team. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you all so much for having me.
Yes, welcome. And could you share with us what your impressions are of the Kansas City area so far?
I love Kansas City. It's a city with lots of heart and lots of things to do on the weekend, so I'm appreciating that a lot. And obviously, overall, I also love the fact that in my job I get to meet a lot of really great kids.
Well, can you fill us in on the recent accreditation news?
Yes, Kansas City Public Schools just got some really awesome news. We got 98 points out of 140 points, which is 70% of the annual progress report. So basically, we're looking at being on the mark for full accreditation for the first time in more than 30 years. Yay. So very exciting.
Yay.
Yes. So obviously, this is a pretty remarkable comeback for KCPS. I know in years past were on the verge of getting taken over by the state. And so the fact that, we have made such a turnaround in such a short amount of time is a really big deal.
That's so great. Can you explain to our audience a little bit more about what APR stands for?
Sure. APR is our annual progress report. So the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education takes a lot of factors into play when it comes to how they basically grade us. It's a progress report. So they look at things like graduation rate, attendance, academic test scores, and things like that. And that kind of all is taken and put into this formula, and certain points are given for each category, and those total up to your APR score, which ours was 98 this year.
Since you've been here, what about the Kansas City Public School District impresses you the most?
I have to say it's our students. I mean, I walk into classrooms and we have a lot of just really amazing kids. They're inquisitive, they're precocious, they're funny, and every time you go into these classrooms and see kids of all ages from all different backgrounds learning and asking questions and just thriving, it's really nice to see. So I love going into classrooms and just chatting with kids about what they're learning and what their life's like, and it's been a really great experience thus far. And luckily in my job I get to be around the superintendent a lot and see him interact with kids, and so we get to go to what's called our little brown bag lunches with Dr. Bedell and talk to kids about their experiences in and out of school, and I don't know, these kids are just awesome. So
can you give the listeners a sample of the types of programs parents and their children can find in Kansas City Public Schools?
Sure. We have so many programs in KCPS. We have programs where your students can learn a second language at places like FLA, our Foreign Language Academy, and Carver Dual Language. We have two Montessori schools. In our neighborhood schools, we're seeing so many different kinds of things. Like, for example, all our teachers here are from Longfellow, and they have a robotics team. They have lots of extracurricular activities and after-school programs. We have chess clubs. There's just all kinds of stuff. I mean, and I know at, I want to say it's at Pitcher or Melcher. I think it's Pitcher. They are doing swim lessons. So we also have a lot of community partners that really help benefit our students. So it's not just about what goes on inside the classroom. It's about the things that are going on outside the classroom as well. We see a lot of really great academics, of course, too. So hands-on learning, experimentation, and things like that for students in our classes. But we have some great community partners, and we're just seeing a lot of really innovative and creative things for our kids to do.
Oh, cool. What is the value of public education for a community like Kansas City?
I think public education, just in general, makes for well-rounded students. You think about kids going in to a school and seeing peers that, you know, maybe don't look like them or from different places. Like, for example, in Kansas City Public Schools, 1 in 5 of our students has a home language that isn't English. So you're having kids come in and get immersed in culture that might be different from what they're used to, and I think that really, you know, brings about acceptance and just kids getting to know different things about different people. And when you have a good public education system, you know, we see our communities thrive as well. So the better we can be, the better our communities are going to be, because those students who are doing well in Kansas City Public Schools are going to give back to their community. So they're going to be, you know, our doctors and lawyers and engineers one day, teachers. Let's push that, right? We need teachers. We need teachers from our community. And actually, believe it or not, we're starting what we're calling a Grow Your Own program, where we're looking for students who are potential teachers in high school, and we're trying to, you know, make them go down that road and come back to us. So, yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Okay, speaking of giving back to the community, I'd just like to say that I am a product of Kansas City Public Schools. I am looking to going to my 50th year class reunion in 2018.
Wow.
I graduated from Lincoln High School in 1968, and when I started school, it was either the same year or the year after Brown versus the Board of Education.
Wow.
So there's a lot of history here in Kansas City that I've been a part of, and I feel like the person that I am today is a lot of it has to do with what I learned in the Kansas City Public Schools. And when I really think about it, I think that I grew along with the school district, because Brown versus the Board of Education, like I said, it was either that same year or the year after that was passed. Then we went through all the civil rights movements and then the school desegregation plans and all of these things. But Kansas City produces some fabulous people. The Kansas City Public Schools produce fabulous people. I have friends that are engineers, own engineering firms. I am a school teacher. I love doing what I do, and I love working in the Kansas City Public Schools. So giving back to the community, if anybody wants to help, mm-hmm. let's go look in the public Kansas City Public Schools and see where you fit in and see where you help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so many opportunities there.
There
for
really
you.
Are.
So many opportunities.
And we've launched a mentoring program this year. So we're really looking for people, for advocates for our kids to come into schools and, you know, take 1 or 2 children that they can mentor and just kind of get to know, and
right.
The more students have advocates, the better off they're going to be.
Good example of that is at Longfellow, Hallmark Cards is
mm-hmm.
one of our
yes.
biggest advocates.
Very cool.
And then who's working at the school tonight? Show me, what is that? No. They're redoing the library. Show me KC. What is that? We have a lot. Oh God, I'm getting real trouble for that one, but I can't remember the name.
Show me KC Schools?
No, it's a...
I think it's Mission Continues.
Mission Continues. The Mission Continues. They're working there.
And that just kind of goes to show you how many different partners mm-hmm. that we have working at Longfellow, as do other schools in the district. I myself am a graduate of the Kansas City Public School System. I'm a 2004 graduate of Paseo Academy, where I majored in instrumental music. And we did a very extensive music program. We learned to read music. We had to go and compete both locally and statewide. So we had a lot of very good experiences. We also had, I have a lot of classmates who continued their passion for music and other arts fields. I do also have some classmates that are that have won Grammys and other awards. And so there was a lot of different things that were going on. Like I said, I was a 2004 graduate, so that was kind of like in the trenches of, you know, the accreditation and all the different things going on. And so, I mean, I wouldn't be telling the truth if I were to say that there weren't issues, but there's issues everywhere. And I feel like sometimes the media makes it seem like that, you know, Kansas City Public Schools has all of these, you know, unique issues that no one else experiences. And so I just like letting the students know that, hey, I've been where you are, and, you know, we go to school, we're successful just as, you know, just like anybody else. So I really enjoy working in the Kansas City Public School District.
And there are school volunteers who work in Kansas City Public Schools also. We interviewed Mrs. Flora and Mr. Sears, volunteers at Longfellow School. Following hearing their interviews, we'll take a station identification break. You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, 90.1 FM KKFI Community Radio, Kansas City. Mr. Sears, why do you volunteer here?
Well, I worked at Hallmark Arts for 38 years, and I retired about 2.5 years ago. And I just felt like I could do more than just sit around at home and play golf and do things that a lot of retirees do. And quite frankly, my first degree was in education, and I always wanted to come back and help young children, especially at the elementary school level, teach them in the basic core subjects like math and reading, which I think are so, so important to our kids today. I just see so many kids today that have trouble in reading, and I know in a heart of hearts that if a child can't read, the chance of them succeeding in life is very, very difficult. So I just want to give back to the community.
And so why did you choose Kansas City Public Schools? You could have gone to any number of districts?
That's an interesting question. I do live in the Blue Valley District, and that's where my kids went. As I grew up, I did go to a parochial school for a short time, but I did go to public schools. And as I was looking around where I was going to go, I noticed in reading some articles in the Kansas City Star that Kansas City, Missouri seemed to have some of the lower test scores. And I felt like, you know, if I could go in and just help some of the teachers, again, just in areas like reading and math, it'd be worth my time. And it has been. I've enjoyed it greatly.
And what do you see here in the eyes of the children?
You know, children are children. They just want to be loved and hugged and told that we care about them. Again, you don't know about the kid's family at all. You don't know if they're in a one-parent family or two-parent family or where they live or how they're treated. But when they come to school, if you just smile and say good morning to them and hug them in the classroom and tell them they're doing a good job, kids are kids, and they want to hear that.
And so what do you think the importance is for public education, for the school to be public, to accept any student, regardless of race, income, any kind of disability? How important is that?
I think it's extremely important. In my opinion, it's only my opinion, public schools are the foundation of the family unit within a neighborhood. If you have a public school that all the kids in the neighborhood go to and have pride along with the parents, that creates a strong family structure within that community. So I think it's extremely important. One other thing I do want to mention is the teachers at Longfellow, along with the principal, do an excellent job. They really do care about the children. They work extremely hard, and it's not an easy job, but they come every day working hard, trying to educate the kids. So I really appreciate that.
And we really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
How long have you volunteered here?
I volunteered here. This is my seventh year since I've been here at Longfellow. And I came here to this particular school because it's in my neighborhood. But the reason I was interested in Kansas City, Missouri Public Schools is because my children went through the system, through the Kansas City Public School system. When my oldest was 5 years old and getting ready for kindergarten, I went and checked out all the schools in Kansas City, Missouri. I checked out a parochial school, I checked out two private schools, and I checked out two public schools. And what drew me was the amazing things that they were doing at Pinkerton. And at Pinkerton in kindergarten, both my sons ended up going there, but they had an art teacher, a math teacher, a gym teacher. They had all these teachers. The kindergarten teacher had two teachers in the room, and it was all day kindergarten. So I thought this was good for my children. They'd had pre-K. They were ready for an all-day kindergarten class. And the cherry on the top was that the bus picked them up at my front door and brought them home to my front door. So all that was very good for the kids. So that's where we started. They went through Pinkerton, and then they went through the cluster, which was Hartman, Marlboro, and I forget the other school. It's just recently reopened. And so they went through that, and then they went to Lincoln College Prep. So they had a great curriculum, and they both got scholarships to MU. And I think a lot of it was attributed to the good school system. So when I retired, I knew I wanted to give back to the community, and what better way than to help out? And so I started with kindergarten, and I've done second grade and I've done third grade, but kindergarten is my special.
Okay, and what do you think the children of Kansas City Public Schools have to offer the community as a whole? Now that you're back here, you're volunteering your own time.
Oh my gosh, they're so loving, but they also are very much wanting to learn what was going on. Anything that's brought before them, they want to read it, they want to talk about it, and then they want to share, or they want to tell me all about what's going on, and did I know this, and did I know that, and it's just fun. We have one time during the 2 days that I volunteer, they have gym class, and oh, it's so fun to watch these kids learn in gym class. It's a lot of fun. And then in library, you have a good librarian here, and she does really great work. So they really enjoy library.
Now that you're here after you worked, what do you think is the value of public school, of a good public school system for our whole community? Or what is the value of public education in itself?
Well, I think that by having a public education, you offer it to every single child has a right to come to school and have that education. And Kansas City offers a great opportunity because not only is it free, but we have teachers that care. We have teachers that want to give their all to these students. And really, I have seen them go out of their way. They use their own money to buy things. They spend so much time with these children. And I think in our community, having public education for the children is a must. I mean, I think that's kind of a right as a citizen of the United States to have each child be able to have a public education.
And since your children have gone through here, would you say that there exists the same funding that you referred to a little bit ago to two kindergarten teachers per room and so forth? Have you noticed, is there any difference in funding?
Well, although my perspective was as a parent, as compared to helping teachers now, but there doesn't seem to be enough money. There just doesn't seem to be enough money. And I never thought that my boys did without. I always thought they got an awful lot from the schools when they were growing up. But now it just seems like there's just not enough. And there are such dedicated teachers that they use their own money to bring things to the school.
Well, thank you so much for volunteering.
I love it.
The 2016 Fall Band Auction is coming on November 18th, 19th, and 20th. This is your chance to support community radio and have a great band or solo artist to perform at your event. Here is how it works. Bands perform live or play recordings for 30 minutes on KKFI. You call in your bid for the artists. You win a two-hour performance sometime in the next year. KKFI connects you with the artist, and you work out a schedule that makes sense for everyone. The band entertains you and yours, then you smile yourself to sleep. It's just that easy. The artist roster and pre-bidding information can be found at kkfi.org/bandauction.
This week on the Thursday night special, new voices from the community from our university classes for Laughing Out Loud and Raising Hell on the Radio. That's Thursday night special this Thursday at 7 p.m. right here on KKFI.
Peaceworks KC presents The U.S. Drone War, An Insider Speaks Out with Sean Westmoreland, former Air Force communications expert, on Wednesday, November 16th, at 7 p.m. at All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut, Kansas City, Missouri. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Citizens Climate Lobby is a national nonprofit organization whose purpose is to create the political will for climate solutions. CCL is sponsoring a regional conference with a talk on November 11 at 7 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village. On November 12 to 13, a workshop will be held in the Simpson House at All Souls Unitarian Church. For details, visit the Citizens Climate Lobby website. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome back. Tonight we're discussing opportunities and challenges for the Kansas City Public School District. In our studio, we have KCPS educators and Natalie Allen, member of the KCPS communications team.
Well, listeners, I'm going to read you a quote by our superintendent, Dr. Bedell, written to the Kansas City Star on November 9th, 2016. "But what is far the most impressive about our schools I visit in this city are the students. Kansas City Public School students are some of the strongest kids I have ever met. They are brilliant, funny, inquisitive, and resilient, and they need us. They need the entire community." So, as you know, our school system has been through a lot, and if we were being quite honest, at times been written off. And the stigma around this district is pervasive. As soon as we start to feel the sunshine on our faces and enthusiasm in the air, a negative media report or an offhanded comment takes our legs out from under us. And I refuse to let any of that negativity impact us from any positive things that we are doing in the Kansas City Public Schools. We have significant challenges, of course. Dr. Bedell cites 41% mobility rate. 100% of our students qualifying for free and reduced meals. We know that our students come to school with more than just educational needs, such as equity and underfunding. Natalie, would you like to comment on that, please?
Sure. I think it's really important to note, kind of like what Dr. Bedell was saying in his Kansas City Star report, that, you know, a lot of our students come with, like you said, more than just educational needs. So we have students who come to us who, you know, they come with a lot. And there's, you know, sometimes trauma in their homes, or they're coming from other countries and have refugee status and have interrupted educations. And yet we're supposed to take them in and, I mean, because that's exactly what we should do. We are supposed to take them in, and after just a year sometimes with these students who are English language learners, we're testing them. And, you know, those test scores go toward our accreditation. So you think about students who, you know, are coming to us with a lot of different variables, and it's hard sometimes. So I feel like our funding oftentimes doesn't give us the resources we need for the students that we have. For example, you know, like I've said, there are students, when it comes to like mobility rate and things like that, what that means is that 41% of the students that show up in one school in the first year are not going to be there by the end of the year. So you're talking about teachers having to set expectations in a classroom on a continual basis and things like that.
So I wanted to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, which all areas of education have begun to recognize now. And it's a common fact that anxiety, violence, fear, insecurity causes interference with your ability to think and concentrate and focus. And this is for both children and adults. So children in areas of high crime, homelessness, violence are subject to trauma. And so one thing I like, and I've enrolled in professional development in our district, is professional development to build trauma-sensitive classrooms. And this is under the direction in the Kansas City Public Schools of Dr. Cindy Beecher. And what she's giving us are ways to create a cushion from these interferences which can so traumatize children.
And I like to speak on hunger. At our school, of course, we offer students backpacks and there's a universal free lunch program. But how about during the regular school year? Because the backpacks are only given on the weekends and before holidays. So there are times when students do not have the opportunity to have a free meal or have a hot meal or have those other snacks. Because we all know the effects of hunger on education. Lack of food, it impacts their ability to concentrate, they're lethargic, they're easily depressed. And also, if students are not being given nutritious meals at an early age, from doing those school-age years between, just say, the ages of 6 to 18 years old, it affects the development of the brain. And unfortunately, if that doesn't change, it impacts our whole society, and that's our workforce. So it's very, very vital. It's vital, and it's important for our students to receive those nutritious and healthy meals from their school districts.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the English Language Learner program that we have in our district. As Natalie had mentioned before, there are many students. In fact, I believe our district has the highest percentage of children either coming from an immigration status or just coming from another area where they don't speak English. And our language department coordinates programs for our children, providing ELL certified teachers, as well as training and other kinds of assistance to the teachers working with our kids. And it is really a good program. And but it adds to what we actually need to know as teachers. We need to know a little bit about other cultures, about how the students are going to respond to each other based on that cultural experience.
And when we talk about cultural experiences and cultural responsiveness, social justice, and the whole nine yards, I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about my school, Longfellow Elementary School, and our principal who walked into the school and he told us, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I've had different, we've done protest marches, blah, blah, blah. And we actually did one, and our children actually participated. They understood what they were marching for. Social justice is very important. The our principal, Peter Ressos, he has brought so many different things into the building, and the cultural responsiveness, the social justice aspect of it is so important to the development of our children. I don't know how anybody could not think that it isn't. These things affect our children every day when they hear them on the news, read them in the newspaper, or just see somebody listen to somebody in passing. They will come back to school and ask us about this, and we need to be able to respond to that for them, and we try every day. I'm talking about Longfellow because that's where I work, and I'm sure that every other teacher in the public school system in Kansas City tries their best to be socially and culturally responsive to these students. It's a necessity.
Absolutely. I think it's so important for us to treat every single child differently, differentiation of kids, making sure that, we see that student for who they are as a person. I think so often, especially with things like testing and test scores, we forget that, you know, this is about more than just a bottom line. It's about the development socially and emotionally of each and every child and who they're going to be when they grow up. And we were talking a little bit about funding and things like that, and I'm just going to quote the superintendent real quick here and say, you know, fair isn't always equal, and that means that you know, when we allocate resources, we have to look at those students who maybe need a little bit more. So, you know, if there are students thriving, do they need the exact same thing as the students who maybe need a little extra help? Why don't we put those resources in the places where they are most needed? And that kind of speaks to, you know, social justice and cultural relevancy and differentiation of kids, because that's what equity is all about.
No, just add something to that, please, if I may. I'm a special education teacher, and so when we talk about cultural responsiveness, we have to make sure that we include those students that have that has disabilities, because again, they may have a disability, but we have to all remember too that they have parents, they need to be educated, they have a heart, they have emotions and feelings, so we need to make sure that we are more empathetic. And fortunately, at our school at Longfellow, where we have a pretty huge population of students with special needs, you know, we try very hard to make sure that those students are included, because we have those inclusive programs in everything that that we provide at our school. They're in the general education classrooms, and where they work with general education teachers, and they have just regular ed peers also that they come in contact with. So.
And one of the first things that I learned as a teacher is that you cannot do it by yourself. So us trying to reach these goals and all of the different needs that we talk about that we need, we obviously need the parents, we need the other teachers, other schools in our district, and we also need the community. There are resources out there to assist the parents and assist the families and assist the schools. And we as a school district go out and partner. There's a lot of collaborating, a lot of partners, opportunities for community partnerships that we really take advantage of. So please, as it was mentioned earlier, if you're someone that the Kansas City, Missouri School District has been on your heart, please reach out to help your nearest school in your area, whether it's your place of employment or just kind of where you live, whether it is a donation or just coming up and reading to the students. The students love talking with people. They're very inquisitive, like someone else mentioned. So there's very, very, very many opportunities for you to come in and assist where needed.
Okay. We hope you've heard our voices tonight. And thanks to all of our public school educators in KCPS. And Natalie, thank you so much for coming to the show. Mm-hmm. And I just cannot say enough about the Kansas City Public School District. We have so much to give. Our students, they're more than test scores. Our students are our city's future. Our students are our state's future. They're the country's future. Everybody has something that they can give to this school district and any other public school district in the nation. Never forget our students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm quiet in the classroom, I don't always raise my hand, I don't always answer questions, I don't always understand, but I have ideas when I stare up at the sky. My sister likes to tease me for always asking why. And I'm more than a number, more than a grade. I know the constellations, here's a painting I made. I read books in my closet, I will not be a two. I'm more than a number, I'm a person just like you. I speak one language here and another in my home. I daydream in both languages whenever I am alone. I'm good at climbing trees, Mom's teaching me to sew. I am full of secrets a test will never know. And I'm more than a number. Watch me fold this plane. I snuggle with my beagle, there's music in my brain. Someday I'll go to Egypt, but I'll never be a two. I'm more than a number, I'm a person just like you. If you think I can be measured by numbers on a screen, if my whole school becomes a test, where will I learn to dream? I love to do hard problems, I write stories and I laugh. My gifts are so much greater than the data on your graph. I'm more than a number, I invent things when I play. I collect shells and fossils, please listen when I say. I will not.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Good evening, and welcome to Remember Our Struggle. I'm Ariana Eckel, apprentice wireman of IBEW Local 124. I've been very sad since the results of our national and state elections were announced. Now more than ever, it seems to me that the working class needs to return to its roots and remember its history. We need some solidarity. On January 17, 1915, a 28-year-old labor radical wrote the song Solidarity Forever. It's been a union fighting song ever since.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble force of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. Is there aught we hold in common with the greedy parasite who would lash us into serfdom and would crush us with his might? Is there anything left to us but to organize and fight? For the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving, midst the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. They have taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of armies magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. They divide us by our color. They divide us by our tongue. They divide us men and women. They divide us old and young. But they'll tremble at our voices when they hear these verses sung. For the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. They say our day is over, they say our time is through. They say you need no union if your collar isn't blue. Well, that is just another lie the boss is telling you, for the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. Good evening, and thank you for listening to Remember Our Struggle. My name is Ariana Eckel of IBW Local 124.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for November 10th, 2016. Jobs with Justice Organizing Committee. Change of date because of the election. Tuesday, November 15th, 6:30 p.m. All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut. Moore Squared Individual Member Meeting. Thursday evening, November 17th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. 3901 Main, just down the hall from KKFI. Yes, Moore Squared has individual members. League of Women Voters Forum on Trans-Pacific Partnership, Saturday, November 19th, 9:30 social, 10 a.m. meeting. Community Christian Church, Centennial Hall, Southside, 4601 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. Check out the Heartland Labor Forum schedule at heartlandlaborforum.org.
And thank you, Molly, for the calendar, and Ariana for that lovely rendition of Labor's anthem, Solidarity Forever. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show is going to be called Student Debt, the New Indentured Servitude. And I know there's plenty of you indentured servants out there, people with a student debt. Ariana's raising her hand. So you might be interested. We're going to have an economist on who is going to talk about the economics of student debt and why it's functioning as a kind of form of permanent debtorship or permanent debt slavery. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.